Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Donna W. and I am a recovered compulsive eater in California. Today is Wednesday, 8th of January. Today we are reading from the Big Book and we are at page 69, the bottom fourth paragraph, starting with God alone can judge our sex situation through one paragraph ending at the top of page 70, we avoid hysterical thinking or advice. The reference numbers for yesterday's 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting are 22058. That's 22,058. And for today's 7 a.m. Eastern Time is 22064 or 22,064. The OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive eating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. I now ask Joanne L. to please read the 12 steps of OA.
Good morning. Thank you for being here today. My name is Joanne, and I am from Rhode Island, and I am recovering from being a compulsive overeater. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. In 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you very much, and I pass.
Thank you, Joanne L. I now ask Jan L. to please read the 12 traditions of OA.
Good morning, everyone. This is Jan L. from Florida. Traditions. Reading the traditions. Number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you so much, Jan. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and press star 1 to mute your phone. To have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book. We're on page 69 at the bottom, paragraph 4, starting with God alone can judge our sex situation. Through one paragraph ending, we avoid hysterical thinking or advice at the top of page 70. And I have Kara L. Please share, and everyone else, please mute your phone.
Good morning, everyone. This is Kara L., recovered compulsive overeater from Long Beach, California. God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel with persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice. Good morning again. This is Kara L., recovered compulsive eater in California. You know, is the last line of this really, I think, I could take this as a mantra for the rest of my life, right? We avoid hysterical thinking or advice. I don't know about you, but for me, I love hysterical thinking. I mean, it's usually where my mind goes first, like to what's going to happen, how can I control it, And what I learned in here is like, I often made a lot of rash decisions prior to getting in recovery. I would follow that hysterical thinking. You know, I would try to control a situation. And what happened was usually the outcome was unfavorable, right? Because I'm not very good judge of what I need to be doing. So what's my solution? Well, my solution is, but we let God be the final judge, right? So what have I learned in recovery? Well, in recovery, I have to do the work. I have to write out that inventory. I have to, work the steps in it, meaning that, like, take it through and ask my higher power and say, like, you know, hey, God, I don't know what to do here, you know, and then to move on knowing that I have a higher power's help, right? My best thinking got me to where I was, which was, you know, feeling alone, unloved, compulsively eating every day, you know, all those things, acting out sexually and inappropriately, or in relationships, needing people too much, or, you know, making them responsible for my happiness, all those good things. Those are my bright ideas. And with my higher power, I just say, God, I give you this day. Show me how to be of service in this day. You know, please remove any character defects, my ego, what they're in the way of me being of service. And guess what? Life has gotten smoother. Now, there's still bumps in the road. There's still those things. But generally, I avoid hysterical thinking and advice. But it's not me. It's because I turn to a power greater than myself and say, help. I don't know what I'm doing here. With that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Kara L. All right. So we'll open the lines for folks who want to share. And please remember that although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every in order that others might share their experience too. So if you shared on Monday or Tuesday this week, please allow others to share. And please give me your first name and first initial of your last name.
Danielle W.
Sherry
F. Danielle W. What was the next one?
Maria C.
There was somebody's S.
Sherry F. as in Frank.
Sherry S.
F as in Frank.
Maria C. F. Thank you. Maria C.
Thank you.
If you have not shared on the lines before, it's a new year, so it's a great time to jump in. All right, we'll start with Daniela W., followed by Sherry F., and then Maria C. Will everyone please mute your line except for Danielle?
Good morning. Danielle W., I'm a grateful member of OA. I'm happy to be here today. I live in LA, and it's hard to watch what's happening with the fires. So I'm grateful to have this place to go. Anyway, you know, it's interesting because when I did my step work, you know, I had become quite anorexic. I went about 10 years without any romance or intimacy. And so I didn't think I had anything to look at in my sex inventory, which couldn't have been further from the truth. I think for me, this is an area where a lot is revealed. My real sickness is revealed, whether it's through anorexia, meaning I'm avoiding any kind of intimate contact, or, you know, overreacting in this area. And for me, you know, I realize I am as addicted to love as I am to food. They're ways for me to feel like I matter, that I'm worthy, that someone cares about me. And it was a real gift because when I was finally able to get really honest and really do the work, so much was revealed to me. And, you know, I started to really see how I used other people. I applied magical thinking to other people. I wanted people to save me. I really used other people just the way I used food, you know, to push the feelings down or, you know, to get a hit. And, you know, we have this opportunity in this program to really heal and really see our part and really ask to be changed. And I'm so grateful today because I can put down the men, I can put down the food, and I can live the life that God has planned for me. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Danielle W. Next up is Sherry F., followed by Maria C.
Hi, this is Sherry F. Thank you for letting me share today.
Hysterical thinking, that gets my attention. As I've been working the steps, I really can recognize hysterical thinking quicker. And I just wanted to share, I had a great moment over the holidays where I had some hysterical thinking start happening quickly when I noticed another family member being kind to a family member. And I was pretty upset about it. And we drove away from the event, and I wanted to share all of my horrible thoughts, my anger and all this onto my husband. And truly, I think by the grace of God, I looked down and I saw that I had a little notebook and pen in my car, and I kept it in there for other reasons, but I looked down and I thought, oh my gosh, I need to write this out immediately so that I don't spread this all over my husband, right? And make the situation more hard, you know, more difficult for us. Anyways, I was able to do that, and no, the situation didn't get resolved that day, but my emotions decreased and my ability to let it sit for a little bit was there. And by the end of the day, I was able to have a nice conversation with one of the members of my family. And I guess I just look at it and I just know that the step work really does work. It has helped me. It's helping me recognize what is mine, what is not mine, what I can fix, not fix. And just, I don't know, I think God is helping me process my strong hysterical thinking and not be so, you know, emotionally involved. So with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Sherry F. And where are you calling us from?
From Idaho.
Okay, Sherry F. in Idaho. Next up is Maria C., and please let us know where you're calling from.
Hey, everybody. My name is Maria C. in California, in Los Angeles. Good morning, everybody. I don't normally get to be here live, but I am today. I think I'm like a lot of us where we get to these paragraphs and I'm desperate to find things, examples of hysterical thinking and how I've used the program to not do that for everything except sex and sex relations and sex ideals, because even though that's what this is about, these pages, it's just such an uncomfortable topic. And also, I, like everyone else, hysterical thinking dominates my life. If I let myself, and if I do not turn things over to God, you know, I can take a picture of what's outside the front door right now and go insane. Or I can do what I did last night and call a fellow and do a fear inventory. Hysterical thinking is not something that comes from higher power. For me, how I see this hysterical thinking in the previous day's paragraphs about like absolutes and salt and pepper and just all of those things, you know, for me, I didn't have much on my sex inventory, but what I saw in hindsight, and not just when I first worked through the steps, but in my first 2 years of recovery, is how good enough, the phrase good enough for me, was like my own kind of absolute. Because I was so allergic to dating and relationships and being open to people that what I had when I was first going through the steps in terms of romance was good enough. And it doesn't sound hysterical, but I think it's the kind of absolute that my higher power did not want for me. There's more than good enough. And I think as I look at these sex ideal paragraphs, this time around reading through, I'm looking at just how I've grown, even in recovery, like God is continuing to mold these ideals if we let him. Thank you for listening, and I pass, and I'm so grateful to be with you today. Maria C. in California.
Thank you, Maria C., and take care. Thoughts are with you. All right, we're opening the lines. We're at the bottom of page 69, starting with God alone, finishing at the top of page 70, hysterical thinking or advice. And please remember, if you share it on Monday or Tuesday, then please let others share. And if you haven't shared, it's a great way to start the year by sharing today. So who would like to share? Please give me your first name, first initial of your last name, and where you're calling from.
Donna B.
Donna B.
Elizabeth.
Ronnie.
A. Elizabeth.
Ronnie B. in Missouri.
Ronnie B. And Elizabeth, where are you calling from?
Michigan.
And then what's your first initial of your last name?
Elizabeth A., like apples.
Thank you. So Donna B., Elizabeth A., Ronnie B., who else? All right, we'll start with Donna B, followed by Elizabeth A. Go ahead, Donna. Everyone, please mute your lines except for Donna B in Colorado.
Good morning. This is Donna B. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, binge purge bulimic, and exercise bulimic in Denver, Colorado. And my name is spelled D-A-N-A. I've heard the slogan, if I'm hysterical, it's probably historical. So when I have these very strong emotional reactions to things, it's very likely that I'm coming from a historical perspective. And the problem with having the historical perspective is that is in opposition to being in the present moment, which is where my higher power resides, where I'm able to get strength and direction from my higher power. When I'm stuck in the past, I'm stuck in my thinking, and I don't make the best decisions. I have an example of recently, I was in an Uber with my family, and we were driving home from the airport. And the Uber driver had this really interesting life story. And I took his phone number with the intention of inviting him and his family to my home. And we got back to the house, and my husband and my kids were like, "Why did you do that?" Because I have this history of kind of bringing in stray cats into our house. And that doesn't always go well. And sometimes it's not always safe or comfortable for my family members. And I wrote inventory and talked about it with a fellow and talked about it with my sponsor. And I could see this thing where I really want to save people. I get so excited and my body gets like upregulated and I, you know, it feels like hysteria. It feels like I'm seeking an effect in the same way that I was seeking an effect from the food. So as others have shared, like turning to the step work, turning to my higher power, turning to my tools, that's an opportunity for me to allow my higher power to come in and calm me down, to step away from the hysteria that's been influenced by my historical life experiences and to bring me back to the present moment. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna B. in Colorado. Next up is Elizabeth A. in Michigan, followed by Ronnie B. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Good morning. This is Elizabeth A., and I'm currently in Florida. I'm from Michigan. And this is difficult for me to share, but here we go. Just hoping that God speaks through me. I grew up with some very dichotomous thinking about sex, that black and white, very shame-based family, but very body-obsessed. And there were inappropriate behaviors, inappropriate boundaries. And I became so promiscuous and went down some really self-destructive paths, trying to get love and just feeling as though, you know, I needed to, if I had a boyfriend, that was going to be the ticket. I wasn't going to feel rejected. And I trashed relationships. My very first inventory, when I came into Overeaters Anonymous in 1986, my sponsor kept it super simple. Rags, resentment, anger, guilt, and sex. And my sex inventory was brutal. I used relationships to get what I wanted. I was manipulative. It was very painful to look at. And, you know, fast forward, just continuing to come, never leaving, never leaving program. Thank God. I've grown in a closeness and an intimacy with God. And it's through that I'm able to be more intimate with my husband. I mean, I have had to do some work and continue, because I thought he needed to earn, if he had good behavior, that we could have sex. Oh, you know, it's not with pride that I admit how broken in this area. And even now, if we're going to be physically intimate, I have to invite my higher power in. I have to invite the Lord into that, because my brain just doesn't work right. And I guess the last thing, I took a very intensive anatomy physiology class at a university in Detroit, and different doctors came in and taught their specialty, and I had such a spiritual awakening during those studies. It was so humbling, because the intricacies of how we are created, it made me just really think we're gems. We're amazing. And that it's a precious gift, the ability to have emotional, spiritual, physical, sexual intimacy with my husband of 35 years. It's just miraculous. And I still have a lot of work to do. And I'm just really grateful. Thank you.
Hi, right. This is...
Thank you. Got it, Ronnie? Thanks.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if you were going to come in or not. I forgot
the
process.
Yeah, I was muted. But... yeah, so go ahead, Ronnie B. in Missouri.
Yeah, thank you. Ronnie B., compulsive overeater and undereater, for that matter, but recovering a day at a time, and I love that very much. I've heard that expression, too, and I love it, hysterical and historical. I just have to be gentle with the word hysterical, because for me it gives the impression of that old-fashioned term, for women, oh my gosh, she has hysteria, like let's lock her up, right? Versus, oh my God, how intense is this? That's either what's happening now or what it's bringing up. Big difference. So in any event, I can certainly feel crazed, and not to lock up, but certainly crazed. And so when that happens, what I've noticed about 6 or 8 months ago is not only is it historical, it means it needs work. It's digging again into some painful part of my past that I might have touched on in all fairness, but I never got deep enough. I was just talking to my sponsor the other night, and I was telling her this thing I was reading about, you know, when we get weeds in our garden, there's various things people use to get rid of them, so we won't get into that, but there are. But there are some weeds that you could spray them all you want, you could junk them out all you want, they're not going to go anyplace except keep coming back. And that's what it's like when I'm hysterical and it's historical. Anyway, so what they were saying about that particular weed is that what you have to do is basically, I don't know how to put this, but you have to like bomb it out. Like you have to get in there and literally destroy it all, which is impossible to do unless you dig, and then put some kind of a, I don't like to use the word explosive, but that's kind of what it takes to get it out. And I need to do that in my own recovery, and I have had to do it a lot lately, and boy, it hurts. Like that feeling, for me, one of the biggest things for me is when I feel excluded, or I feel in like it's intentional. Oh my God, I just want to go back into the closet. When I was a child, you know, or being at a friend's house as a young child and all the girls getting together and me not feeling like I fit in. And I can remember this distinctly and leaving and just going to bed for the night at like 5 o'clock, you know. And so today, boy, it goes back. And I got to tell you, I did about 1.5 billion four steps in all my programs over 44 years. And still, I can feel hysterical about a situation. So I don't know, when I pray and meditate, and this is what happened this week, and had a really good breakdown, physically breaking down, crying, you know, talking to God, yelling at God. Somebody else said it. It brings me
time.
It brings me back to my source, time. And so for that, I'm very grateful, and thank you for your service.
Thank you, Ronnie B. in Michigan, Missouri. Good luck with your weeds. I'm opening the lines for more shares. Who would like to share today?
Linda G. in Alabama.
Linda G.
Larry G. California.
Larry G.
Babylonia A.
Babylonia A. And where are you calling from?
Los Angeles.
All right. Who else?
Amelia O.
What was that?
Amelia O.
Amelia, thank you. Amelia O, and where are you calling from?
Connecticut.
Okay, let's go with that lineup. We've got Linda G. in Alabama, Larry G., California, Babylonia A. in California, and Amelia O. in Connecticut. So if everyone, please mute your line, and we'll move forward with Linda G., please.
Hi,
go ahead, Linda.
Okay, hi, it's Linda G. in Alabama, a compulsive overeater and anorexic. And I turned to God with my sex situation because I knew I was being sexually anorexic. And I knew that there were problems in my first two marriages that were caused by me, that I had been blaming entirely on my first two husbands, and that I had been selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate. I had hurt them. I had aroused jealousy, suspicion, and bitterness. And God led me to both of them. I couldn't find them when I did my first fourth step. And when I did my eighth and ninth step, God led me to both of them. And you may have heard me share about this before, but I'm going to repeat it because I need to. And he helped me find both of them. And when I apologized, when I made amends to them, the first one made amends to me. And he told me he was sorry that he had played his part in it, which I had never heard him say before. And the second one was happy to hear from me and told me he was proud of me for facing up to my addictions and that he thought I had come a very long way in facing up to those addictions, and he was very proud of me. And that really blew me away. I wasn't prepared for that. And I have to go because there's disruption on my line, but I'm going to pass. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Linda G. in Alabama. Next up is Larry G. in California, followed by Babylonia A.
Yeah, Larry G. from California, recovered compulsive eater. Oh, my God, the stray cat story. I love it. For me, it was bullies. I would take on people who are bullying other people. And, oh, my God, that was a disaster. You know, if Dr. Phil's audience got a hold of this sex inventory, half his audience would disappear. This is just gold. It's just not about physical intimacy or lack of it. It's about sex relations. And I think it's, for me, it was the beginning of emotional sobriety. This is where it all started. And thank God, I really thank God for the men in my life, the sexually sober, the men who were capable of having emotional intimacy with their wife that would take me through this. And I'll never forget the very first time I started to work with a sponsor, I had to put together a emotionally sober shopping plan with my wife because she would get angry at me because I would go shopping with her and I would take off and it just caused a lot of disturbances. So this plan was to stay with her right by her side while she shopped. And I never forget this time we were buying a sweater for my grandson and we spent like I thought a lifetime on whether to get the sweater with the teddy bear on it or the one with the dog. And I just hung in there with her. And when I got home, she was so grateful. She was so appreciative of that. And, by the way, she took the teddy bear back to get the dog. But I felt, you know, this was the beginning of intimacy with my wife. And my sponsor taught me there is 1,000 different ways that I can be intimate rather than just being sexually intimate. And this has created a bond between her that is better than anything I've ever have had in my life. We have a great partnership. I'm an emotionally immature one. I have to do frequent 10 steps. She's in program. She's a recovered Al-Anon. If you want to raise your emotional sobriety to a new level, get in a relationship with a recovered Al-Anon. I'll tell you, it'll kick your ass or kick your arse, and it has done that for me. And with that, I pass. Oh, by the way, great shares the last week or so. I just have gotten so much out of this call. Thank you. I'm out.
Thank you, Larry G. Next up is Babylonia A in California and followed by Amelia O.
Well, good morning, everybody. I haven't been on this meeting in a while, but I'm glad I got to it today. For the first time in 8 years, I am dating someone, and it's actually the first healthy relationship I have ever been in my life. And he's a Christian also, so we share the same higher power, and that's really like, it really feels good to, and he's very passionate about his faith, so it's really cool to share that with him. And I've only been on 2 dates. He lives in Arizona, and he flies out to come see me, but we talk all the time, and we text all the time, and so far it's going well, and he brought me flowers on one of our dates and a gift, and he opens my door. I have never been treated like this in my life. I used to pay for the guy's date in my other relationships. I have dated a heroin addict. I've dated a homeless guy, like all this stuff, and an abusive guy. So I'm really grateful. And I also, as far as sex goes, I don't want to have premarital sex, and I told him that. And he's okay with it, and he respects it. I said I don't even know if I want to kiss before marriage, just to leave room for God. And he said he respects that about me. So I think that's really cool. And that's it for me. Thank you for letting me share. And, oh, this is all because of recovery, And so it's taken my desire for a clean abstinence to an even higher level, because I know if I relapse, I will lose everything that I have, my schooling, my relationship, my friends, and I don't want to lose everything that's happening and all the healing and great things that are happening. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Babylonia A in California. Next up is Amelia O in Connecticut, and then we'll have a open the line for one or two more shares.
Hi, I'm Amelia in Connecticut. I am a compulsive overeater. And, you know, the sex inventory for me was just full of this massive amount of shame, really because of my lack of relationship. And even the word hysteria just brings up all of this shame around it, because of that connotation of hysteria is a woman's emotion. And it's something that I always dealt with by going the absolute opposite direction, that if there's a man around, I don't show emotion. I got to be tough. I've got to be practical. And by avoiding relationships like the plague, this is still something that needs a lot of work in my life. But the other thing that jumped out at me about that reading is where it says we avoid hysterical thinking or advice. And that's really important to me, because it means I don't need to jump on the bandwagon when someone's saying, you need to do this now, you need to deal with this now, we have to deal with this now. I can be like, whoa, hold on. And a great saying that I'm just starting to put into play in program is, how important is it, really? And, you know, I have a job where it's easy to be pressured to be in three places at once and to do things as fast as possible. And it's like the ability to slow down, to evaluate what's, you know, a week or a month from now, what's actually going to stick, is really critical to my own recovery and sanity. So thank you for listening. I'll pass.
Thank you, Amelia O. in Connecticut. Okay, we have time for two shares. Who would like to share? And it's a great chance to jump in. The water's warm.
This is Grace in California.
Mary C. Okay, we'll leave it at that. And Mary C., where are you calling from?
Ohio.
Okay, so go ahead, Grace in California.
Okay, all right, thank you. I wasn't planning on sharing. This is my least favorite chapter in the book, to tell you the truth. But I was a person that just shut myself off from all relationships, for I would not get hurt. And I blamed everybody. I blamed them all. It was all, I was the victim. And then doing my inventory, my sex inventory, God, I was the common denominator. I was the problem. And I was shocked to find out. And I haven't dated in a long time. But this summer I did date. I dated several men. And after going out, and I was kind of disappointed, so what I decided to do is, I was on a dating app. I got off the dating app, and I decided, you know, I'm going to let God. If God wants me to meet somebody, I will meet somebody. I don't want to just date a person just to go out, and I don't want to waste their time. I don't want to waste my time. You know, I did have some nice dates, but nobody that I really would want to spend any time with. So I decided to be open to the universe, open to God, and let God bring the right person into my life, if that's what it's supposed to be. And if I'm supposed to be single, then that's the way it's supposed to be also. So I am just turning it over to God and let him take care of it. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Grace in California. Next up is Mary C. in Ohio. And Mary, go ahead and press star one to unmute.
If that was not Grace in California. I think that was a misunderstanding. I'm Grace.
Okay, who was it that just shared?
Mary.
Mary
just shared.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mary C. Next up is Grace in California. Thank you.
Good morning. I am really new to OA and to this morning meeting, and I am in shock at how this subject is exactly what I'm immersed in right now in my life, hysterical thinking. I am having a great amount of fear around finances and survival right now, and I'm a longtime Christian, and I keep hearing, you know, go to God and let go and let God, and I'm trying to actively do that, and lots of tears and saying that you have faith and actually having blind faith and just relaxing and knowing, wow, God's going to fix this. Those are two different things. So I am at the very beginning of starting to learn the steps. I've been in OA maybe 4 or 5 days. I have a sponsor, and I'm at the very beginning of this journey. So I hope to have the courage to admit that I need help right now, and I'm just grateful for this program, and I trust that with time I'll learn what you guys have learned and hopefully set aside the panic and chaos and catastrophizing that comes when you know that financial survival is in question. Anyway, that's all. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Grace in California. If someone wants to jump in for a 1-minute share, we have time. Okay, well then we'll move forward. Thank you all for your valuable shares today on this delicate topic. And thank you for Team Wednesday and sending lots of love and prayers to those in the LA areas with the fires. We will now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And I have Shelley E. Please read the vision for you on page 164.
Thank you very much. Thanks, everyone, for your share today. I'm Shelley, a compulsive overeater in Arlington, Texas. Ooh, the Big Book, page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you for letting me do service, and I pass.